Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Okay, let's get stuck straight into podcast number 7. We've got an opening question to kick us off from Caleb Meller. It's a good question. It's an easily answered question.
Phil Coutinho.
Who would you prefer? Would you prefer peak of career Torres or peak of career Suarez?
Ooh, I think I'd go for peak of career Suarez.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
because he's better.
Because he's a much better footballer. Yeah, I love Fernando Torres, and I guess there's probably a lot of people out there for whom Torres will have been the first love. Yeah, he was my almost last love in some regards, and because he jilted me so badly, it's weird, isn't it? Because let's face it, Suarez was probably as much of a prick, if not more of a prick, than Torres.
Is
agitating, like, you know, agitating for moves. But we forgive Suarez because he was just
he left the country
so
as well,
good.
Paul.
Yeah,
it makes a big difference
to
me.
Yeah, exactly. When you go to Barcelona and you go and win titles and Champions Leagues and all that, then you kind of go
to Chelsea.
When you go to Chelsea and you're shit,
pisses me off.
Then yeah, it's
look. Ultimately, for me, Suarez is a better player anyway. You know, there are teams that Torres in his peak would suit. I'm not sure Liverpool's a team that he would particularly suit right now, whereas I think Suarez can change games.
Perfect for us right now.
Suarez. Suarez would be perfect for us right now, and I don't think Torres would be. And, you know, they might both have become the best striker in the world while they were at Liverpool. Mm-hmm. Arguably, I think both actually did achieve that, but one of them would fit into our team and one wouldn't, and that's what it kind of comes down to.
Exactly. I think the Torres is more in the mould of a Owen or a Rush or a Fowler or whatever, whereas Suarez falls into the category of your Dalglishes and your Keegans, I think, you know, those guys who are just so good at football that they're the best player, not just the best player in your team, they're the best player on the pitch at any given time, and probably the best player in the league and up there with the best in the world.
We went to Anfield a lot when Suarez was there. Suarez's standout memories, there are a lot more of them. Mm. And it was like every single game.
Yeah.
There was something that he'd done that you've never seen anyone do with a football before. Yeah. Torres never had that. He was a great finisher of the ball.
Yeah.
But he never had the consistency of wow moments that Suarez had.
We also had to, I guess, sit through that last half season of Torres as well, when he came back from the World Cup and he wasn't right, and it looked like his pace had gone and he looked unhappy and all that. So it taints your memories of players as well when they go out that way. Because even like Michael Owen, you know, he was still really good when we got rid of him. Whereas the fact that we got to see Torres kind of fall away, I mean, I know you can be, and it's not part of the question, I guess, because you're talking peak Torres. But you're right. I think if you put peak Torres in this team now, I think he'd struggle the way that Daniel Sturridge has struggled, and I think he'd struggle the way that Divock Origi struggled to some extent. So no, you're right. Whereas I think peak career Suarez. I think non-peak career Suarez, if I'm perfectly honest. Like Suarez in 5 years' time, it'll come in and be amazing in this team. So yeah. But thanks very much for your question, Caleb. We'll do more questions later on in the pod. For those of you who are joining us on the RedmenTV.com in video form, there's a nice way for yous. No way for you, podcast listeners.
I did wave, but you wouldn't have known if I hadn't mentioned it.
You might be lying. There's only one way to find out. Go to redmentv.com, subscribe. First and foremost, topic-wise, Brendan Rodgers, congratulations to him.
No, I'm not having that.
You're not having congratulations?
Let's talk about the derby first before we talk about Brendan Rodgers winning the SPFL.
Yes.
Be arsed.
I'm done with the derby, if I'm honest.
Not at all. Over Brendan Rodgers winning the SPFL. Yeah. This is a Liverpool podcast, Paul.
Yeah.
And we're here to talk about Liverpool. And the last game we played is the derby. So we will talk about the derby and then we will talk about Brendan Rodgers.
Okay, what do you want to say about the derby?
It was fucking amazing. I love stuffing Everton all over the place, especially when it's so easy. Mm. You know what I mean? And like, they were so crap and they had no idea whatsoever about how to go about playing Liverpool. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's about. That's what Everton Liverpool derby should be about. We put them in their place. We played them the way that we wanted to play them. We let their players fail, all their big players that they've been absolutely banging on about for weeks now. Tom Davies, he's got a 70% win percentage this year, you know, 2017. There was actually people, my brother was on the comments of these combined 11s going, giving shit to Liverpool fans.
Yeah.
He's got a 70% win percentage in 2017. What's Phil Coutinho's? Doesn't really matter.
I love that.
I
love the shrinking of the sample range to make
to
a point.
To suit your own point. Yeah. Absolutely ridiculous.
And where was he at the start of the season? Was he playing in the under-23s at that point?
He's probably trying to find a pair of socks that fit him.
No, it's good. That's the thing about the derby is that it was... I said this in a number of places, but it was just inevitable. You know, once we got that first goal, even though they got the equaliser, at no point did I feel as though they were going to damage us in any way. And to be fair, they had the chance with 3-1 when Holgate hits the shot and it's deflected, yeah, and Mignolet makes a really good save. I could have made things very different. One or two little moments where you go, you know, like there's a ball across the box here and there, but by and large, you know, it's been said all over the place. It's not just by me, but I don't feel like Liverpool ever really had to pull out all the stops to get a result there. I genuinely felt like if they'd managed to get another goal, we'd have just gone and scored another one, and we'd have started. And I'm not sure we ever will have had to have gone completely all out of them, because they didn't get the team selection right, they didn't get the team tactics right, they didn't get their mentality right. We had them beaten the second they walked onto the pitch.
And you know, if you're not a subscriber to Edmund TV, you can just see me smiling along, because everything that Paul said there makes me really happy.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. Like I say, we've done a load of derby coverage. If you want to watch more of it, you can do. Final Word Show was an absolute belter on the website. Obviously, this falls weirdly because we've got a midweek game, so we're going to kind of skirt around, not to talk too much about the derby, not to talk too much about the upcoming game, so people can obviously, if you listen to this on Thursday or Friday and you're thinking, oh, is this out of date? It's not, because we're just going to pretend it didn't happen. So instead, we're going to congratulate Brendan Rodgers on winning the SPFL. I think there's a very easy temptation, Chris, to go, but it's only Scotland and it is only one team, they're only a one-team league by all accounts, and that's all absolutely true. I don't think there was ever any doubt that he was going to win it. But I think the style in which he's done it, I think that's the thing that's pleased, I think, Celtic fans more than anything else. He's come in, he's got them playing with a swagger. They're unbeaten as of today. They could go unbeaten all season. And that's a prize in and of itself.
Yeah, it is. It's commendable. It truly is. And look, he's walked into a league that tactically hasn't changed since the 70s, and he's brought some new ideas. It kind of was going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. You couldn't help yourself, could you? No. No, fair play to him. Like I say, I look at managers who've been given big opportunities, and where your next career move is defines the rest of your career. You look at David Moyes, who's gone to Sunderland and made the prick of himself. And then has now basically alluded to
went somewhere else first to made a prick of himself, well,
yeah,
as well,
but no, but yeah, true, actually, yeah, but it's that thing of you can see those decisions being made, and what Brendan, you can for all the being critical of, you know, of the Scottish football, exactly, mate. You know, and this is the thing. It's not, and I'm not saying this doesn't mean Brendan Rodgers is capable of coming back in and being a competitive top six, top seven English Premier League manager. Maybe that'll happen one day. You know, maybe the Chelsea job will come up in a few years' time, and he'll be bang ready for it. But he'll get to play, win it. The experience of winning trophies, that's the thing that he just didn't have, and there's only so many inspirational talks you can give when inevitably someone turns around and goes, mate, you're 5 foot tall and you used to manage Swansea. You know, why, you know, I've been playing international football for 15 years. What have you, you know, who are you to tell, who are you tell me what to do?
If he's got an invincible season on his CV, people will listen to him, mate.
And that's it. I mean, people, as I say, can criticise all you want, but that for me, if nothing else, is a smart was a smart move. And if he does, because and if he's able to do something like that, I don't think it's dependent upon this. But if he's able to do that, if he's able to create some interesting records and make a little bit of a name, so it's not just the standard. Because people are throwing out all the Celtic manager names of the past who've won the Scottish League titles, and it doesn't make for it's not a list of the greatest managers ever to manage in the game. But it's about what he does. What he does, there he goes and wins a few league titles on the bounce, and then
I'll tell you what, it's not. On. It's, you know, I don't know whether this will be his career trajectory at all. I don't know whether this is what he's thinking. But first of all, he could make himself a Celtic legend by going and beating the nine, of Rangers, couldn't he?
Yeah.
That, you know, it's not that it's not inconceivable that he could stay there for the next 3 years and do that.
Mm-hmm.
Or he could open up another type of a job offer for himself. Why not go to a league where it's almost exactly the same in terms of standard of competition, but you go and win a league with Porto or Benfica, and all of a sudden you're actually talked about in European terms as being one of those great managers.
Yeah.
Yet, really, it's still just a two-team league in the same way that Scotland is. Now, the other competition might be slightly better. I wouldn't know, to be perfectly honest with you.
There's definitely more competition in the Portuguese league.
He could go and do something like that, win it at a canter probably just as easily, and then he's talked about for one of the actual really, really big jobs. So it seems like a really clever thing to have done.
Because you're right, because the natural people go, you'll be getting linked with championship jobs. And you're like, well, no, because the championship is even more competitive in a different way, of course. Than it's a similar type of competitive to the Premier League. You've got a lot of clubs with more money than most, and the pressure on to succeed. You know, so yeah, I completely agree with that. It'd be interesting to see what he does. But ultimately, for me, I've never wished Brendan Rodgers any ill harm. You know, I thoroughly enjoyed the vast majority of his time as Liverpool manager. I think he's a smashing fella. Loves his footy. Has a great vision for how football should be played, and you know, so yeah, you know, I'm glad when you look at like the Roy Hodgson stuff, and you think I would struggle to throw a bucket of piss, my own piss, on that man if he was on fire. That's an exaggeration. I want to see Roy Hodgson fail because I want to see the facade smashed down. Brendan Rodgers, sound mate, you know, I'm shit. Please do watch the video. I've just tried to put my elbow down on something and completely missed.
It's your second fail today, actually, isn't it?
Just since I've been in the office. Phil Neville, before we get on to Liverpool,
Chris scrambles around for the tweets on his phone.
Yeah. This is a Liverpool podcast, but we thought it's always worth having a laugh at people that we don't like on Twitter.
Yeah, old Fizzer18 on Twitter.
Fizzer18,
what a tit.
Phil Neville did a Twitter Q&A and it came up with some interesting responses.
It came back and bit him on his ass, to be perfectly honest with you, Paul. So James Dames at 48 Colossus said, are there any players you take at United that play for Liverpool? Who and why? Now, he didn't get the question, really, because he just answered the who, but not the why. But he put Henderson. Needless to say, you need to go and find this. This tweet came out on @Fizzer18's timeline on Monday night. There are around about 800 comments to pick from, with the United fans just absolutely fuming at him. First one, iconic number 7. This is why you're not a coach at United anymore. Then someone jumping on the back. Exactly. You could have said Coutinho or Mane and chooses Henderson. Another guy says, you've spelt Mane wrong. Which, you know, I can't really argue with that, to be honest with you. And then other people just like, funny now, Phil, tweet the real answer. And it's just really funny, and people need to go and look at that, because Phil Neville getting laughed at by Man United fans, he's just universally hated, isn't he? And I kind of like that about him.
Yeah, because when you said it, I thought it must have been because the Liverpool question. I wondered whether it was an Everton one that he was doing specifically or something like that. Like, but you forget, I almost forget about his time at Man United. It's weird. He's probably got so many medals, you know, from his time there, but he was so inconsequential at that football club. It is an interesting one. Me and my dad were discussing this at the weekend, because we've been doing this all-time Premier League 11 thing over on Ball Street every Friday, and how some footballers with the gift of time, it becomes accepted that they were really good, but at the time no one rated them. And I was thinking about Gary Neville and how it's completely accepted that Gary Neville is the best Premier League right back of all time. And yet, at no point during his time as a right back in any given season did anyone think he was the best right back in the league at that point. Everyone would have looked around that time and gone, he's not that good. And it was that thing of having all of the English opposition kind of fall away from him, you know, Rob Jones having his injury problems, etc., etc. And, like, you know, it's one of those, it's weird how that happens with football sometimes, isn't it? That he was never...
I really did. I disagree, just from the fact that I really did think he was the best right back in the league. And now, maybe that wasn't a universally accepted opinion, but I can't comment on it, because I actually did.
But it's mad. It's one of those things, isn't it? I just remember at the time, and everyone, you know, at the time, every other club would have been like, everyone's like, what, you know, what? He's not. Because he just wasn't that good. Where he came out on top was being there, being consistently there for a long period of time. As you look at an Ashley Cole on the other side or something like that, and look what he could do in that position. Yeah, it always rankles me that. That's the Gary Neville thing. Like, clearly knows his footy. You know what I mean? He's clearly no slouch, and he was never shit. But it's funny that, you know, I love the way that happens all the time, because he got to play 10 or 15 seasons. You can never discount him against the guys who maybe had two good seasons here or there, and that kind of thing.
I think the thing for me that made him a great right back was that, first and foremost, he was an amazing tackler, like a great defender. But I can't believe, I'm quite shocked that you think that's a normal thing for people to think that about Gary Neville, because all people used to talk about was his link-up play with David Beckham and that right-hand side being the best right-hand side in the country. And he was part of that. And, you know, watching Manchester United play, and we used to talk about the waves and waves of attack. It wasn't just Beckham and Giggs, it was the fullbacks as well. Yeah. You know, and Gary Neville was a massive part of that. He'd never really make mistakes at the back either. You know, he was consistent in his performances, but we're not talking 7 out of 10 performances. I think we're talking 8, 9 out of 10. Could whip a ball into the box as well. So for me, I find it quite strange, but, you know, that's your opinion, and that's sound like.
Yeah, weird. So Zlatan, if we, let's, you know what, we've done like too many non-Liverpool topics here. Zlatan thinks that United's going to get top four with the presser billing as at Liverpool's expense. Fair play. So it made us interested to have a look. This is Anfield, did an interesting article where they've been looking at April and the fixtures that the teams are in the battle for top four, and in fact, and top four exclusively, they've completely written Chelsea out of it, which is fair play. Saved themselves some ink, or saved us some ink anyway, because, you know, we had to print it out and they just put it on a website. Liverpool, Spurs, City, United, and Arsenal, and the fixtures that face these teams between now and the end of the month. What I've done is we've extended it slightly, because, of course, Liverpool's fixture against Watford was moved to the Monday. So that technically falls within this category as well. There was actually a question asked from Gaj Mohan, who said, how confident are we to win all our remaining games? And a few people have kind of been asking about this, about how we feel Liverpool will fare between now and the end of the season. So I thought it was worth having a look. We've spoke about it a few times on this podcast, about how it's more about how the other teams are going to be face, what they're going to have to face between now and then, because we've now faced all of our, in inverted commas, big opponents, as it were. We've only got teams left that we should, again, in inverted commas, should be beating.
Yeah, I mean, apart from, for me, the obvious one is Southampton, because, you know, we've struggled to score against them.
Watford away. That went spectacularly well last season.
How many times have we played Southampton this year? 3 times, and we've not scored.
Yeah. So, anything out of these remaining fixtures that really stands out for you?
Yeah, I suppose when you're looking at April, first and foremost, I think that's the logical way to do it. The fact that, you know, we were talking yesterday about will Manchester United sacrifice the league for the Europa League, and you know, maybe the fixtures for Manchester United go April the 13th. They play the quarterfinal first leg against Anderlecht. This is after Everton and Sunderland, by the way. Then they've got Chelsea, and then they've got the second leg against Anderlecht.
Yeah.
That game against Chelsea with three days after the Anderlecht match is going to be a massive game for them. I mean, we should have got Chelsea's fixtures, because I'd have liked to see what their rest period was like and stuff around them. But that game could really end Manchester United's Premier League top four hopes. Wouldn't it be nice that one of our rivals snipes off the other?
Yeah, this is it, isn't it? I think the Everton and the Sunderland one, we did this, didn't we? I would expect Man United's focus to be fully... In fact, what's the gap between Sunderland and Anderlecht?
4 days.
So that's the Sunday to Thursday, is it? Mm. So that's, I mean, it's reasonable, I guess. But they're the two games. They've got Everton at home.
Sorry, this is a... Don't forget, Manchester United have got a game last weekend. Then they've got a midweek match. Then another match. Then another midweek match. Yeah. Then another match. Then another midweek match. Then the second leg against Andorra. Yeah. You know, they've got a really tough run.
But what I'm driving at is Everton Sunderland can be the same kind of focus as ever. You know, they'll give it a full one. It's going to be the decision, I think, is going to be made between that Chelsea game is going to be decision. You're dead right. It's going to be decision point for Manchester United because, I mean, look, if they absolutely piss the first leg away from home against, if they come back to Old Trafford with a 2-0 lead, two away goals in the bag or whatever, as an example, then they're less arsed about the Anderlecht game following Chelsea, and maybe they're thinking, well, we can handle both of these now. And that's the thing. You're right in terms of they've got two games a week now for the vast majority of the season, in potential anyway. It's how competitive that Europa League is for them, which I think is what's going to determine how well they approach stuff, because the teams that are left in the Europa League are, let's be honest, they are piss. They are fucking piss. It winds me up compared to like the stuff that we've had to face whenever we do this and we have to go through. Like, you know,
even Manchester United, Dortmund, Villarreal, Sevilla.
Yeah. I think back to 2001 when we had Roman and Barca on the way, you know what I mean, all those kind of things. So yeah, I agree that Chelsea game, I think if Chelsea beat them one way or the other, I think they probably do think, yeah, maybe it is all or nothing on the
I'm going to tell you what I want from each of these games. Everton, Wayne Rooney own goal. Sunderland, David Moyes to beat them. Yeah, yeah. Don't know. I don't really know anything about Anderlecht or anything like that. Chelsea's just do what they do and just beat them. Yeah. And Manchester City at the back end of April, another derby win for Manchester City would be absolutely lovely.
Yeah.
But if David Moyes and Wayne Rooney, if David Moyes wins and Wayne Rooney scores an own goal, I'm going to Pop World.
Yeah. I mean, to be perfectly honest, the Wayne Rooney stuff less so
for a week.
But the Sunderland stuff, the David Moyes stuff, could not be. You're dead right on it. Look, Man United will beat them because Sunderland are shite. But absolutely. But there is something to David Moyes. Like
play for a draw, David. Well, trust me. That's what you've been doing against Liverpool for years, is Everton, man. Just play for a friggin' draw.
The bit in Terminator 2 where Arnie lowers himself into the molten metal and the thumb comes up. Well, in this world, it would be Moyes. He's going into the molten metal that is the Championship, and he just sticks two fingers up at Man United as he's going down. That would be absolutely tremendous. I'm all in on that. So yeah, like Man United's definitely difficult. We'll expand these out in a minute, but Arsenal as well, because they've still got the FA Cup, and I genuinely think this is what Arsene Wenger's clinging on to. Because no, because he's used this FA Cup as been like his get out of jail card. And to be fair, I think it's a law of diminishing returns with each year. I remember speaking to Robbie from Arsenal Fan TV prior to the first of the FA Cup wins, I think it was, and saying, mate, the FA Cup shit. You know, we'd love an FA Cup win just to get ourselves a little bit of silverware again. But if you think that that's good enough, then you know you're sorely mistaken. He's like, no, the FA Cup's still a big competition. But and it's like if they got to the final, they'd be like, yeah, great. Whereas I think Arsene Wenger's seen the impact that it's had and seen the fact that cup has kept him in this job for another 3 years, and he's thinking. So again, don't be shocked if nothing else, maybe he'll see that as his last hurrah, because again, by the time this is out, they'll probably have played West Ham. But West Ham, Palace, Butter, all three very, very winnable fixtures for Arsenal. By West Ham are shite. Crystal Palace, to be fair to them, pull out a magnificent result against Chelsea at the weekend, and Middlesbrough are shite as well. So, but if they were to drop 3 points within that, that puts top four at a real stretch for them already. Or if it's conceivable they could draw.
I think top four is difficult for them anyway. You know, they're two games behind us, and they're now 8 points behind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can't be affording to drop any points. So I think you're right on that one, mate. There is one wrinkle in the tail of Arsenal's season. I think we do have to expand it out a little bit further now. Their last four games of the Premier League are Tottenham away, Manchester United at home, Stoke away, and Everton at home. Now, I could foresee Everton beating them on the last day and finishing above them. That would be really great. Absolutely brilliant. But three games prior to that, I think Arsenal are going to be the last team other than Tottenham to win at White Hart Lane before it's demolished. There's a narrative for you, because they do have Manchester United at home, but I think Tottenham are going to win that one. But prior to that, on April the 30th, Arsenal go there for the last time. And I kind of want to see Arsenal win at White Hart Lane.
Really?
Just for the few. Just imagine, just Tottenham fans would be, their heads would just fall off, wouldn't it? Arsenal were the last team to... Imagine if they drew the last game at Man United and the last team to win at White Hart Lane was Arsenal. Bosh.
Yeah.
Brilliant narrative. Love to see that.
See, I'm on the other side of that, because they're so shit against Arsenal, and Arsenal have got their ticket, they got the number, and I like the idea of like Spurs getting this win. Like, look at West Ham last season when they were going down all the Berlin stuff, and it was like the last time here, and they had a good little run, a good end to the season, loads of positivity, and then they moved into the fucking soulless bowl of the fucking London Stadium. Spurs are going to have to go and play Wembley next season, by and large, by the looks of it. So it's kind of like, I don't mind them having that, but this notion of like, they're going to finish above Arsenal, they'll be able to beat them right at the end of the season, and then they're going to go and play in Wembley where no club side has been able to have any level of consistent success.
Okay, there. I'll get behind that, but I want Arsenal to beat them in the FA Cup final.
I want Arsenal to lose everything, mate. Yeah. I wouldn't mind.
Because I don't mind them having a little bit of happiness, but I want them to have the pain as well. I want them to remember that they're the Spurs fans.
I just want to see Arsenal suffer. I don't care about Spurs, if I'm honest.
I do, because I think they're in the best position to succeed after Chelsea.
Maybe.
I think they're in such a good place as a football club.
Yeah.
I would take any little wound now that slows them down.
The thing about Spurs to remember though is they've never had any success.
Yeah.
And whereas in some clubs having a bit of success, you can say, is the springboard to more success. They've never had any expectations of success though. So if you give them a sniff of success, it actually carries with it a whole new weight. That football club has never had to experience a fan base who expect them to deliver at the end of a season. So the more you start feeding those little things, you give them a trophy and their fans will be like, we've got to win the league next season.
I get that. It's an interesting point, but I'd rather have the whole conversation being about Pochettino hasn't won a trophy because I know how much that hinders people as well.
Yeah, true.
Hence Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah, no, fair play. But yeah, again, from my perspective, I want to see Arsenal suffer. I've never forgiven them for 1989, and I never will. It's actually the anniversary of Fever Pitch coming out as well today. I just saw on Twitter the movie about Liverpool essentially fucking losing the league title to Arsenal. Good on you, Nick Hornby. Like I say, the Arsenal stuff, just because, I'll be perfectly honest, we said on Social Club this week, I'm kind of getting a little bit bored of all the meltdowns and stuff at Arsenal, but I want to see where it goes, because if it's bad now, imagine how bad it is if they not only finish below Spurs, they finish outside the top four, and then they lose an FA Cup final to Spurs. I don't know what that looks like. I've got no concept. Chris, they're fighting. You said your words, not mine. They got a draw against Man City. Man City, good team. They were punching each other in the face inside the stadium after a draw with a tie that could still win the Premier League. That has won Premier Leagues recently with chock full of world-class players and world-class manager and more money than God. And just...
I know, but... I think I've had a few hours to think about that since Social Club and stuff, right? And I'm not sure that I want to see that. Imagine now what's happening.
Yeah.
Right? What if people died? Like, genuinely? You know what I mean? We're talking about, they couldn't take that.
No.
There'll be fucking stabbings or something, and I don't want to see that.
Yeah.
Like, I genuinely don't. If you could tell me right now...
There'll be no stabbings
and everyone's going to be okay... Oh my God, Paul, I'm jumping on the bandwagon.
Yeah, exactly. As long as you can guarantee, I can guarantee nobody dies over footy, which is obviously fucking ludicrous. Yeah, completely agree with that. But my thought tonight
is... like London riots again.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But it's just, there's the thing, is that we're never going to see this situation again. This is the last unique situation in the Premier League. You've got the longest serving manager now in the Premier League. We'll never see anything even remotely like that ever again. And so therefore, the fallout from it will never be this magnified ever again. So I kind of, like I say, just, you know.
It's like sitting down for the world's biggest car crash. I'm waiting for it to happen. That's what it's like. We're sitting here waiting for all these cars to enter the arena, like destruction derby type of thing, and just sitting there going, come on.
This is like, you know, you think about, like, look at the Godfather trilogy, you know, absolutely incredible set of films, beautiful, you know, the long form, amazingly produced. But, you know, you can sit down and basically piss away 9 hours of your life watching all those films, let down by Godfather Part 3. It's an opportunity for them to really complete complete it out. If you're going to sit down and you're going to watch an epic unfold before you, don't fuck the last part up. Don't rob us of that Arsenal. The human part of me feels sorry for them and all the shit they've got to go through.
Is there a link between the nonce in The Godfather Part 3 and Arsene Wenger, Paul, or is that where you're going with this?
There's a what?
A link between, like, you know, the family incest at the end of Godfather Part 3 and all the intimations towards that and Arsene Wenger, or is that just a happy coincidence?
I'd totally forgotten that was part of Part 3, if I'm honest.
Okay, cool.
I was thinking more, there's a mad helicopter bit, and it's just a shit, it's a bit shit.
It's a terrible, terrible, terrible film. Mainly because of the incest.
Well, it's mainly because, is it Francis Ford Coppola, cast his daughter in the lead role.
Yeah, he ends up in a little bit of incest, which is just weird.
Like an op-ed.
Francis Ford Coppola put his daughter into incest scenes.
Yeah. Speaking of incest... Manchester.
I thought we talked about the Nevilles.
Manchester. Man City, from another perspective, because I think we've looked at the clubs who I think are most likely to finish, more likely than of any, to finish below Liverpool if things go our way, and that's United and Arsenal. I'm interested in the Man City stuff because I think, again, they've got Chelsea this week, and I think that's going to be pivotal to how Liverpool are in a battle for fourth, or we're in a battle for third, if I'm perfectly honest. And I think if they beat Chelsea, the story will be there. That'll be two defeats on the bounce for Chelsea. There's a team now that thinks it's got it sewn up. How do they pick themselves back up again? Can someone like Spurs or City sneak in then and put the pressure on? You know, if they just put City, do to City what they should do to City, Liverpool's eyes should be firmly fixed on where they are right now, to be fair, in the league table, third, and saying, nah, this is exactly where we want to be.
Yeah. I can see Chelsea turning over Manchester City. I can't see them losing two games on the bounce, if I'm honest. Mm-hmm. I think that'll, you know, the fact that the games are going on at exactly the same time is going to... I'm a little bit gutted that that's the case. I'd rather have played the day before it or something like that, just to put a little bit more pressure on Manchester City. But you can't, you know, you obviously can't change that now. We're going to know going into that game that it increases the importance of the Bournemouth match for me. Mm. And I expect Liverpool's players to be absolutely on it for that game because they know they've got a chance.
Yeah.
And again, it's about, and you've said this for weeks, it's about not being in that conversation for fourth.
Yeah.
It's about being in the conversation for above. So people start not even thinking about you as in that. Yeah. And as soon as you can do that, you're not a target anymore and you're almost home dry.
Exactly. I think the other biggest fixture, I think, between now and the end of the season is that Man City-Man United game. Because I look at kind of in the way that City Arsenal ended up being at the weekend. Now we'll talk about Liverpool's fixtures in a second, because again, all of these things and all these permutations are completely irrelevant if we don't get our own house in order. But that the way the draw for Arsenal City and how that opened the table for us nicely, I think similarly with the Man United Man City one, that could be, I mean, as we've said already, United may well be looking to make a decision around that point one way or the other. But again, if those two teams draw, or, you know, either way, one team is dropping points, and again, I think that changes the conversation of whether we're looking up or we're looking over our shoulders, you know. Fingers crossed.
City, it comes 4 days after an FA Cup semi-final at Wembley with Arsenal, doesn't it? And for Manchester United, you know, it'll be there, I think it's their seventh or eighth fixture in April alone. So you're averaging sort of 3-4 days rest all the way through it. So It's great, to be perfectly honest with you.
So let's look a little bit at Liverpool then. As we know, Bournemouth midweek, which you probably know the score of, but we right here, right now, do not. Stoke, West Brom, Palace and Watford. That's for the, well, as I say, Watford's on the 1st of May, yeah, but that's technically the comparable fixtures for this these game weeks coming up. Here's the thing, because I look at, we both kind of circled from the other teams, the big fixtures, as it were, the teams where we think, you know, there's important points being dropped, and I look at them and go, part of me looks at them and goes, yeah, but like with us, we're likely to drop some points between now and the end of the season. It's likely to happen because that's what football teams do. They don't win every game of footy, but for as much as I'm a little bit fearful, because you look at the games, like, to be fair, West Brom away is going to be an absolute twat of a match. Crystal Palace at home, Sam Allardyce loves trying to do something at Anfield, doesn't he? It doesn't always work out for him. And then, you know, what we got, you mentioned it earlier, Southampton. We've not had a great run against Southampton, particularly this season. West Ham away is not necessarily even though it's been a good hunting ground for most people this year, still tricky. Tricky away game.
The biggest, go on.
The comforting factor for all these is that even though I'm not confident looking at those fixtures, I'm not uber confident. We need to win some of these to make me feel more relaxed about them. The point is, we're looking at the Man City and United and Arsenal, and we're circling the Chelsea game and the Spurs games and blah blah blah. This is just as much chance for Man City as they could lose to Southampton away. You know, Man United could drop points to a Sunderland out the blue.
Anyone Burnley away, you know, and it's a tough game.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Look, there is, and I think there'll be a lot of points dropped between now and the end of the season from all the teams on these lists. And you know, for me personally, I think you highlighted it as well. I think that West Bromwich Albion game is going to be the hardest one for Liverpool. Mm-hmm. You know, just how good they are, you know, from set pieces and stuff like that. The way that Tony Pulis has got them working at the form that they're in.
Yeah.
You know, they're in, what are they in, eighth in the table?
Yeah. Comfortably in eighth as well.
Comfortably, and it's madness, but that's what Tony Pulis does, and we've historically struggled against his sides anyway. But if we can't get into top four from the position we're in, we don't deserve to be in the Champions League ultimately, because we're in pole position now.
Yeah, exactly.
And I truly believe if we can't get in there with those eight fixtures remaining, then we're not good enough to play in the Champions League.
It's always the way, isn't it?
With me.
Yeah, completely agree on that. We've got some questions coming up in a moment, but the only thing.
Sorry, it's not fine, but I'll accept it.
No, yeah, exactly.
It's not fine at all.
I agree. You know. Yeah, you've got right. We've got rights of view, and there needs to be questions asked. But this is the thing, the being philosophical about footy is that teams, by and large, end up where they're meant to, where they deserve to get, because football, there's too many football matches played in a league campaign for it to not be a fair. Well, you know, for it to not be a fair assessment of where you end up. And now, if it was something like, and you've got outliers to that, like we might. You know, something freakish might happen and you lose out by 3 points, and they're the kind of ones where you kind of go, you have to kind of shrug your shoulders and stuff like that. But the random situation where we finish fourth and then United and Leicester win the European competitions, that kind of stuff. But
it's all made a lot harder with the Mane injury, though, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Just the last thing on this, I really wish we were playing West Brom in like another in May rather than the middle of April, just because, let's be fair, they've 8th is sewn up for them. I would like Everton to shut the door on 7th, just to make it not a thing. I don't want them having to battle for stuff. And look, Tony Pulis is a prick, isn't he? You know, he's going to set his team up by and large either way. But what we're going to the only thing that you can't factor in once you get into May, especially, is how many of those teams that are going to be playing in those fixtures that are done. Their season is over by this point, and hopefully in our regard, for the likes of our final four fixtures in May, Watford, Southampton, West Ham, Middlesbrough. Watford should be safe by then.
Middlesbrough should be down.
Southampton will be safe. West Ham will be safe, and Middlesbrough will be down. So hopefully that definitely plays into our hands a little bit, if nothing else. Whereas there's a chance that, like, let's look at Spurs. Again, West Ham will be safe. Man United are Man United, so who knows? Hull City might still be battling to save themselves from the drop. Man City got Palace, Leicester, Watford. That's a probably a pretty solid running all told by that point of the season.
We've got rearranged fixtures as well, remember, so we don't know where they're going
to come. West Brom going to come in at some point, yeah, it's a good point. Man United, Arsenal, Spurs, Palace, yeah, that's not good, that is it.
Away, away, home. Arsenal away, Tottenham away, Crystal Palace at home.
Yeah, that's tasty.
Bye-bye, Zlatan.
Yeah, and Arsenal have got United, Stoke and Everton again. I would bank on Everton being on the beach long before that point, unfortunately. But who knows? Maybe Romelu Lukaku looks to put himself in Chelsea's eye line.
I'd love it if they went to a red sand beach, Paul, and Ronald Koeman got fucking ripped again by the Everton fans. What's he going to a red sand beach?
Yeah, just go to the Red Sea. They're like, whoa, go on Blue Sea.
They're such fucking dicks.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah, we would ask questions, because you mentioned it there, the whole Sadio Mane thing. A couple of people have asked questions regarding that. Joe Liverpool, Fridge_James on Twitter, says, if Mane is out for the season, how would you line up the team? And there's someone else who asked a very similar question, and I will probably therefore stumble upon it when I think it's the last question, and it's basically, oh, here you go, Andy Lennon 8, without Mane, how do you think we will cope for the rest of the season? It's a smaller teams make or break period for the top four. So we'll start with Andy Lennon's one, actually. I agree, that's a major fear, isn't it? You know, it's very easy for us to look at the obvious example we have of being without Mane.
January.
African combinations. The period of the season that killed our title ambitions.
We won 1-7.
Yeah.
That's worrying reading. Mm-hmm. You know, it's worrying remembering how we played in those fixtures as well. Let's not forget, you know, there was a couple of decent results in there as well. You know, I think we had a draw with Chelsea and a draw with Manchester United, but we weren't looking dangerous enough over the entire month, all told. And I didn't particularly think the Adam Lallana right wing thing worked. Mm-hmm. You know, we're even more hampered now because we've not got Adam Lallana to play right wing or centre.
Yeah.
It's an opportunity for somebody to step up. And I always think back to, and I always ask you his name, the Mank Machida or something.
Makeda.
And I always get it wrong, though. Yeah. I think I always say Machida because I think of a UFC fighter called Lyoto Machida, who's the UFC light heavyweight champion a while ago. He's a karate fella. It's cool. It's fine. I always think of him, and I'm starting to think of Divock Origi being him.
Yeah.
And we've never had someone that I can remember, apart from maybe Heskey at the end of one of the seasons, and it might have been the 2001 season, or when he first signed, was it in the January or whatever, that came in and scored goals between the middle and end of a season. Mm-hmm. And Divock Origi scored at the weekend, and I'm looking, thinking about the Mane injury, I'm thinking, I wonder if we're going to get one of those players who can just come in and score some goals between now and the end of the season, because we just haven't had them.
Well, here's the thing, because I think when we got into January, the way the squad was set up, I don't think it favoured us, because again, it was such a congested fixture list for a start. We had those FA Cup games in there as well, which were, exactly. You know, we had too many FA Cup games where we put out much weakened sides and didn't do the business in them. And I also think we reached the point there where, when we at the start of the season, when players were given opportunities in cup games, they were going, "This is my chance to prove me worth." By the time January came around, everyone knew what Jurgen Klopp's first 11 was, and I think there's players there who went, "Well, it doesn't matter if I fucking perform because I'm not going to be starting when Mane comes back anyway." Whereas we've got a run now where there's a chance Mane might be out for the rest of the season. There's a chance Adam Lallana might be out for the rest of the season. There's a chance Jordan Henderson might be out for the rest of the season. There's exactly what you're saying there. I think there's a clearer opportunity for a player or players to go, yeah, to one or two things. I know I'm on my way out the door. Daniel Sturridge. Here's a chance for me to leave on a high. Here's a chance for me to, here's a chance for me to say, I'm not playing for West Ham next season. Yeah. I want to play for, insert slightly better club than West Ham here. Or there's a chance for, again, a young player to go, well, I've seen Liverpool being linked with X, Y, and Z. West Brom.
Could you imagine Daniel Sturridge at West Brom? What a bad fit that would be.
Oh, my God.
But they are a better club than West Ham.
They are a better club. but, yeah, there's a chance for a young player to go, yeah, Jürgen. You know, let's say Harry Wilson is a great example of that. He's done everything in his power to put himself in the limelight this season. He's been captain in the 23s. He's been scoring goals for fun. Maybe it's something like him. The good example for Liverpool, like that in the opposite end of the spectrums are Vladimir Smicha and possibly Didier Mann. 2005, Smicha in particular, who'd not really, you know, his career never really caught fire at Liverpool.
3-4 years.
He was just injured constantly, you know. And when he played okay, and then he was in and out. And then you look at his contribution in the European Cup final. And then I agree that there's hopefully one player out there who's just capable of going, me. This is all about me. And I agree. Right now, Divock Origi is the most obvious one because, well,
because he's scored on the weekend and he came on.
And he's not a bad croc, and he's the next in line.
Hope that he comes into the side and going, I was robbed of the end of my last season, and that's knocked me back big time, knocked me back in the pecking order, knocked everything. I'm owed this end of the season, and I'm going to take it with both hands.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because imagine if he'd been fully fit. Now, I know it means at the end of last season, I know it means Daniel Sturridge probably doesn't get the opportunity to score that worldie in the Europa League final, but Divock Origi starts that game fully fit, fresh, having had a couple of games under his belt prior to it. Maybe wins it. You go into the summer, Jürgen Klopp and Buvach, etc., are looking at it and going, well, this guy starts. Yeah. This guy's number one. We change our transfer policy. We change our tactical system for the entire season. You know, based on the group. So, you know, you're right. It could have been a completely different world.
He'll think that he's owed this. Mm-hmm. You know, and look, it's about him proving that he can play in this system. We've not seen enough of him going on the right hand side. So I can't see that that's going to be the case.
Nope.
You know, the fact that in January we moved Adam Lallana there, we always move Roberto Firmino there when we make changes as well, says to me that that's going to be the way that we're going to set up. I think we're going to have Origi. I think we're going to have Firmino on the right and Coutinho on the left-hand side. Now, it's maybe not what I would do.
Yeah.
But I do think it's what Jürgen Klopp's going to do.
Here's a question then, because in the absence of, you look at the three men that make what we do tick, three of the four, count Roberto Firmino as the fourth, in Henderson, Lallana, Mane. Do we revert back to what we were doing last season almost as an option?
You mean 4-2-3-1?
Go to 4-2-3-1, put Emre Can and Gini in front of the back four and say, here's what we've got. Because let's face it, you know, Mane's been a revelation, and we desperately lack his pace when he's not there. But have we maybe got, is it maybe a slightly better solution? Because then you can go back to playing. You still got a question mark over who plays that right hand side of the three behind the league, as it were. But it means you're going back to a style that suits Divock Origi a little bit better.
I think that's right. And, you know, I think you put Roberto Firmino in the 10.
Yeah.
you keep him close to Phil Coutinho. Your dad was talking about it. When those two are near each other, they play better.
Yeah.
You know, they're always looking out for each other. They understand how each other plays the game and stuff. So I'd have Firmino in the 10. I'd have Coutinho on the left-hand side. I'd maybe have Divock Origi up front. And then you've got question marks over that right-hand side. Now, personally, I shouted it yesterday, Wijnaldum right-hand side could work. You know, that leaves Lucas and Chan. It's not a great two.
Yeah.
But if Lucas can do it on his own, he can do it as part of a two.
I think you're right. I think both of them are actually slightly better than that. The problem with this, of course, is that Genie's, that is his best position is where he plays. I wouldn't like to see him. This is the problem. We keep coming back to it. Short blanket stuff, isn't it? Is that you're running the risk of totally fucking up what we do in midfield to try and bolster what we do in attack. You know, and again, it's good. I'm glad that we've got options because I don't think we'll see anything drastic. If I'm perfectly honest,
I think when you look at the movements of Genie Wijnaldum, though, and you look at the movements of our front three, I don't think normally he's involved in that. But it certainly is something that he could do. So I'm absolutely fine with Firmino popping up on the right-hand side for portions of the game and Wijnaldum to pop up in the 10 because he's been doing that from the midfield position. So he understands how to get forward and be a part of that. It's really about Divock's movement off the front of the three of them. You know, I've talked about it all season long. Though if you're having the movement between Firmino, let's say Wijnaldum and Coutinho, and they're the three that are changing around, it changes the dynamic. I think you're playing with the ball in front of their defenders. You're making it very difficult for two banks of four to sit and block you. I think it could be an option. It's whether Genie Wijnaldum can adjust at this late stage of the season. I'm sure he can. He's a very, very good player.
Exactly.
I feel more comfortable with him adjusting than Trent adjusting to a right wing spot. And I'll tell you why. Because Trent's already adjusted to playing right back this season.
Yeah.
And he's adjusted to playing, and he's in a central midfielder. So asking a Trent Alexander-Arnold, who's in good form, and I've got no doubts that he can do it long term, to play right wing, I would feel more comfortable with the experience Wijnaldum, who's shown me he's adaptable already, that he can go and do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Based on what we've seen, what we've seen so far, it seems highly unlikely that Genie will get moved.
It does.
And it seems unlikely that we'll see anything drastic, because you mentioned it the other day. I think I brought it up last week. I wouldn't be against seeing James Milner moved back into the midfield, because look, the guy was our combined highest goals and assists maker last season. You know,
his corners might improve if he doesn't have to run up and down the pitch as much.
Maybe not too.
Just knackered, lad.
Yeah, but the question is that what's the point of Alberto Moreno if he can't come? No. But if he can't come
that's
in,
that's been the question. No, I'm not sure anyone's got the answer.
But if he can't come in against, you know, but Stoke, West Brom, Palace, Watford, Southampton, West Ham, Middlesbrough. You know what? Why is he even? I think,
other than the fact that he's not that good at footy and he's not that good a defender, I do think the height, you know, there's probably 3 inches between Milner and Moreno, and Moreno and Klein are two of the shortest fullbacks in the Premier League. And I think that looking at the teams, your Stokes, your West Bromwich Albion, they're teams that will exploit those deficiencies, and maybe that's why he's not looked at it. Couple that with the fact he's crap as well, and you've got your reason, Paul.
I think he probably gets an unfair amount of criticism, Moreno, and I think he's nowhere near, he's not a great defender by any stretch, but it's that thing, isn't it, if we're looking at short blankets and you look at the thing, it's not like our defence is great with James Milner in it, you know what I mean, one way or the other. So it's that thing of in the absence of, If we're lacking the key ingredients of our attack, then what's better off? What's better, having the ability to score goals or the ability to not concede them? And what were Liverpool most likely to do off the back of that? I don't think we try to become a team that defends for our lives for the last 8 games of the season, as it were. It wouldn't shock me to see us go a bit more attacking. Again, what it boils down to is, though, I don't see James Milner being moved at this point. I think it's going to boil down to two approaches. I think it's either going to be what we've seen already, which is Origi goes up front and Firmino moves out to the right. Simplest thing. Or what the next one, which is what I would like to see more, is whether it's Trent, whether it's Woodburn, whether it's whomever. Move someone. Honestly, Emre Can. You know, put Grealish in the midfield, put Emre Can on the right and play him a bit more that, because he's actually done that a few times toward the end of games. We've pushed him further up the pitch and he does that pseudo Kevin Davies, you know, wide target man kind of thing for us. None of these are absolutely ideals, but it's for me, again, it still boils down to we either change to a system that suits the players that we have, or we put players who are most suited to the system that we know how to play in there, because I just don't think the whole playing the same system but putting Origi up front has proved that it's worked. But that, because it is why it puts too much pressure on him. Maybe that's a good thing. You know, maybe if he wants to be a Liverpool player, he has to take that pressure and run with it.
I'd be interested to find out how many times we've started the game with that as the front three.
Mm.
You know, because I remember periods of games.
Well, he's only started 7 games in the league
exactly,
this season.
Exactly, so have we given her a fair crack? Mm. That's what I'm trying to say. You know, I remember the game against Manchester United when we were in poor form. It was Sturridge up top.
Yeah.
You know, so how many times have we actually started with and have we given him a fair crack of the whip?
Mm.
And, you know, maybe, hopefully he'll be thinking he hasn't.
Yeah.
And hopefully he'll take this opportunity. And let's not forget, we've got Sturridge. He's probably going to be available for like 60 minutes at some point.
Yeah.
So we can use him against someone, maybe try and get a goal out of him for his 60 minutes before he gets injured again. And hopefully that goal could... I said a long time ago, I think Sturridge has got something to do with this top four story. I said it months and months and months ago.
Yeah.
I still believe it. I still think that he could score a goal that gets us top four or something like that, or win us a game that gets us the 3 points.
Daniel Sturridge will score a goal between now and the end of the season, provided he's fit enough to put a fucking shirt on. Really, really interesting stuff, and we'll have to see. And I guess, again, Bournemouth will probably give us a clear indicator. There were rumours before we're filming this on Tuesday morning that Emre Can's might be out as well.
Yeah.
So, God, genuinely, no idea. Genuinely no idea. Panic stations. Next question, then.
At this point, I'm now starting to think that Gomez comes in at left-back and we move James Milner into midfield.
Ooh. Interesting.
Done before.
Not
to a particularly high standard.
Not to a great standard. A fine standard.
I remember not that 3-0 when West Ham beat us at Anfield, and I just remember him stinking the place.
Okay, so this question comes from Ben Coates. Ben Coates, our favourite. Some of the big clubs have capos leading chants and singing. Do you think this would help people singing if there's someone to follow?
I think it would help some people. I think it would... You know, it's not something that I'm against or anything, but I'd imagine that a large portion of Liverpool fans would be, and I don't know why that would be the case, but I think they like the idea. I think a lot of Liverpool fans like the idea of just being organic.
Yeah.
Now I'm all for anything that improves the atmosphere, to be honest. So I think that I would definitely have a look into it and see if you could get something like that working at Anfield.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people would be reluctant, though.
I think we've got these already, if I'm honest. You know, I think there's guys, you can hear the same, it's this deep, rich Scouse voice that started at like old, it's always an older fella. And I think that's the kind of thing, I think we have them without naming them or putting them specifically, and I guess that we could push them more front and centre, and I maybe there's something to, I don't know how you would identify this or whatever, but there is definitely something to who are the guys, who are the ringleaders, who are the fellas who are, they probably go home and away, they're the guys who were at the front of every coach leading the chants, of the guys who were starting the chants in Anfield and going, you know what, mate, here's your season ticket. Thanks very much. You know what I mean? No, and you don't need to do anything as cringy as make him an... you know what I mean? It doesn't need to be...
Doesn't need a megaphone.
Exactly. It doesn't need a megaphone. This thing, yeah. You know, it doesn't need to be anything over the top, but there's definitely something to, I think, finding out these guys who are... They're like the gatekeepers to Liverpool, the history, to Liverpool's songbook almost, because they're probably out there, you know what I mean? The same way we've got... You look at what's happening right now. They're redoing Liverpool's museum, and Liverpool have hired this outside company to put this whole experience together, and they've got they've hired Nicky Alt and Dave Kirby to help write this, and you know, I think there's political things around that. Some people like those guys, some people don't like those guys. What they are is diehard old school Reds.
Yeah.
They've been through all the highs and lows, and they love the culture of Liverpool. There's probably something in an equivalent in that kind of world almost, where you do have these, like I said, I'd say ambassadors, but it makes it sound a little bit on the nose or whatever, but you take what I mean on that. Find some guys who are then it's their responsibility, you give them that responsibility, and you make sure it's a you know, this is not about people from outside of Liverpool are bashing at them, but there are there is a scouse core to that, you know, of these fellas who've got been there, know all the songs inside and out, and have no problem starting the chant as well. You know, give her a war to these fellas. I think it'd be fucking massive. That's a fucking hot cup of tea. Next question. Oliver Brown, Ollie Wally, did either of you watch WrestleMania? And if so, any thoughts? I did. It's taken me like 3 days and I've still not quite finished it, but I did and enjoyed it. When was the last time you watched a main event at wrestling?
No idea.
None at all?
None whatsoever. Maybe 10 years ago. I don't know. Maybe.
What was it that got you out of wrestling? Because when we were like 17, 18, we were mad into it.
I never really enjoyed the wrestling.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the soap opera of it.
I think that's pretty much true, like, yeah.
The wrestling I could give or take. One thing that annoyed me, it's not a main event or something, but Raw going to 3 hours a few years ago, I always just thought was mental.
Yeah.
I think, you know, they lost a lot of characters that were good. I think that's proven by the fact that there's so many old characters that keep returning.
Yeah.
I think they've struggled massively for storylines. You know, I hear people talk about the wrestling and I just think, oh, right, okay, so we're still doing the same dance.
Yeah.
And I think it's just kind of growing up in that regard, and a lot of people won't like me to say that, but, you know, when something is written for you and, you know, I loved Friends. I'll put it this way. I absolutely loved Friends. But 10 years was probably about enough of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And there's only so many times. I can't stay with wrestling for 30 years. I just can't. They've not reinvented it enough for me to stay with it.
I watched it and there was some parts of WrestleMania that I absolutely loved and some things that I was like, wow, that's new. But there was still, by and large, there's only so many things you can do within the ring. There's certain set pieces that you can change. But there's this whole guy gets battered in a tag team match and he's getting battered and he's being kept away from his corner and then he finally makes the tag and the guy comes in and cleans house kind of stuff, and you still get the same thing for it. But yeah, it's like, you know what it's like for me? It's Green Day, Blink 182. Yeah. It's Cali Punk and all that, isn't it? It's the same, they're singing the same songs about fucking the mum, not fucking the mum and dad,
that wouldn't be very popular if that was the case.
That's definitely not Cali Punk, by the way. Yeah, that's a little more hardcore. But yeah, it's that, isn't it? You know, it's about the same fella singing the same songs, whereas it still appeals to the city, by and large, the same core audience and stuff. But yeah.
That's funny because I like that stuff because it takes me back to that time.
Yeah. And that, to be fair, that's what I got from WrestleMania this week, was watching Chris Jericho and watching, you know, the Hardy Boys came back for the first time in since I watched it.
Were they better than they used to be?
They were not better. You can't be better because they're 10, they're 15 years older, but they were good, you know what I mean? And the stuff that they were doing, it was kind of, I had no idea who the other guys were. It made it relevant for me to watch it. And I was like, wow, these are still amazing at what we do. And there was so much, you're right, the nostalgia side of it, I love us more than the physical side of it. And it is still the stories and stuff around it. That's the great part. The problem is I've seen it all in a ring. So yeah, that's the thing that, yeah, defo hampers it, if nothing else. But yeah, I'd say I watched it. The first main event I've watched probably in 15 years maybe or something. And yeah, thoroughly enjoyed it. WrestleMania is always a good laugh, isn't it? So yeah, Kez_LFC7, if you moved to the other side of the world, e.g. Australia or New Zealand, would you be getting up at 2-3 a.m. to watch Liverpool play?
Yeah.
No.
Now, I've done it for American footy. I don't know what it's about like.
Hang on, how often do you watch every
everyone. I fall asleep a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, on a Sunday, I tend to record them and then I tend to watch them later than they are. I'm quite lucky in that I just don't follow anyone on Twitter that talks about it. And if you do, I unfollowed you.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to change the question slightly. I would now.
Yeah.
If I was born in Australia, would I? Probably not.
Yeah.
And if I was born in Australia and football was like a second thing for me, maybe not. That's the crux of it.
Yeah, it's hard for me to put myself in those shoes because I like other sports, but I'm not passionate about any other sports particularly. I can watch I can get enjoyment out of cricket and rugby and tennis and, you know, a whole host of sports. I can, but I've never understood supporting something that's that far away. I mean, I get, like, I've got it, I guess I've kind of got it with moves and a little bit with wrestling and stuff like that. You know, things happen while you're a kip. But yeah, I don't know that if Liverpool. It's hard for me to put myself in those shoes because Liverpool would have to not be in Liverpool, and if Liverpool wasn't from Liverpool, I wouldn't support Liverpool. I'd support whatever was here instead. You know what I mean? So yeah, if it is what it was now, if Liverpool just decamped to Australia for the whole season and it wasn't my job, like I struggle with them during pre-season as it is to do a handful of games. If I had to watch 38 Liverpool games that all happen between the hours of midnight and 6 o'clock in the morning, I just wouldn't. I would do.
The most likely thing is, what are we talking? Midnight and six. I'd be recording.
Yeah,
and I'd get up and watch it. Like,
yeah, and even then,
I find that easier. To let's say it happens at 1 o'clock in the morning, I'd find it easier to just get up at 5:30 and watch the game than to stay up. Because if you're a parent and you know what, like, sleep deprivation is about,
you never get those hours back.
You're never getting them hours back. Whereas you can have just a chunk of sleep and then get up at 5:30 and carry on with your day.
I'll be honest, like, you know, following on for the WrestleMania thing, I stayed up and watched the first fight. So I watched Shane McMahon, and again, I was buzzing, and I was like watching it through one eye on my phone lying in bed. This is not like. You know, that was that, and I felt it the next day. It's that thing of maybe if there was again, it's lifestyle thing right here, right now. If I was still in the culture of, I love the culture of people who go to Boozer. You know, like the big clubs when we were over at Joxer Daly's over in LA. I love the fact that people all get together and do it. I don't think I'd enjoy. You know what I mean? The idea of getting up and watching it on me Todd anyway. You know what I mean? Is a bit.
It's weird.
Yeah,
isn't it?
A bit weird.
I haven't watched American. Probably. You know, I used to watch consistently those 1 o'clock games on a Sunday night. But it's since my kid was born, Robin. Yeah. I've not consistently stayed up to watch them because it's just a lot more.
Well, difficult. We started the last MLS season when Gerard was there, and I said to the MLS show, you know, I'll keep a closer eye on the Galaxy because of Gerard and what have you. It's just not, you know, I know like the Sunday evening games are a little bit easier, but even then, it's the whole lifestyle thing. You've got to craft your life around something. Mm-hmm. And as I say, I've got nothing but respect for people who do that, by the way. You know, the people who basically fuck their entire week because the Reds are playing. You know, and they get up and the people having bevies at 3 o'clock in the morning, and, you know, more power to you, because that's a level of fanaticism that I don't think I can reach. But yeah, you've got to genuinely be absolutely mental about something to totally craft your life around it, which I've done, to be fair, with Liverpool and stuff. But I don't know whether if it was the other 12 hours of the day, whether I would be able to keep up with it.
It's difficult, isn't it? I'm looking at the NFL season's like 16 weeks, pretty much the regular season. You know, it's only a few months.
Yeah.
Football never really ends, you know. And
you get to what?
You can do a World Cup. You can do a World Cup when it's in Brazil or something in the mad timings.
Yeah.
Because it's a short period of time. You can kind of do that. Like,
the end's always in sight.
But the 38, that's a long old slog.
But I think this is why so many people get more wound up, or maybe people have always gotten this wound up, but I think there's people get, I perceive people as being more wound up by Liverpool, is that because if I had to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to watch Liverpool and watch Liverpool put in a shit performance, I would be 10 times more angry about them doing it than if it's just part of my normal weekend, I get up, I watch the footy and go home thing. And I do wonder how much of that feeds into a lot of the online stuff that you see, because this is what happens now. You've got more people who are isolated in these things. They're getting up, they're sitting on their own, they're watching a game, and they're being... They've got the narrative being fed to them by the commentary, plus what they're seeing with their own eyes, and they're getting dead angry about it. And because it's like taking that "this has cost me £100" argument.
It's entitlement.
Well, exactly, and it's totally and utterly fucked your day off the back of it, and then fucked your week. You would feel loads more naturally angry about stuff.
You know, I've spoken about the entitlement stuff at length on the podcast in the first few weeks, and you know, it throws my head in that, because no one's asking anyone to get up at 3 a.m. Ultimately,
yeah. And this is the thing; it's not that I'm not saying that the anger with Liverpool's being shit or whatever is not right, because we all feel it. It's just, and it'd be hard from the outside looking in. It would just be magnified by the circumstances. I feel like, because like anything, I've done things where I've gone, is it that bad, or is it just me life? Is it my life that's bothering me, or is my life that bad, or is Liverpool affecting it? You know what I mean? You can have, if you're having a twat of a week and then Liverpool lose, fuck me. You know, it only magnifies, exacerbates how you're feeling. So yeah, just as an aside to that question, but yeah, as I say, brilliant work everyone who does do that, because you know you're probably in some regards a better fan than I am, but in other regards you're just not, because no one's a better fan than I am. Anyway, thanks very much, Kez, for your question. That's really good. And just quickly then, because we could go into this, and we've done a lot of transfer stuff, and there will be loads more transfer stuff to come. MDDZN on Twitter says, and I will rephrase it slightly for him, who do you want Liverpool to sign in the transfer window? Yeah, I know.
How many times are you going to have to be just asked this question?
Just that question.
In different iterations.
Yeah.
I am going to sit on the fence. I'm going to say we need a striker, a world-class striker. We need someone who can come in and score goals. We need a midfielder, we need a left-back, and we need a forward of some description.
I want us to sign Alexander Lacazette.
Yeah, you know what? I never, a few months ago, and we did something for the stat show, and I am fully behind that now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's almost like, he's that perfect mix of, he's not world class, but he's got enough experience. He scored 20 plus goals in his last four seasons on the bounce.
Yeah,
you know, and he's ready to make that. Ready to make that step up. I really do think so.
So, final question, and I'm so sorry. I have in my photoshopping diviness, I've cut off your name, Steve Cosmo, I think it is, who tweeted this question in. If you're both Jedi, what colour lightsabers would you have? This is really tough.
I think I'd go for purple. I'm sure Mace Windu had a purple one.
Yeah, Mace Windu had a purple lightsaber. Why would you go?
I loved his fighting style. Do you remember read the book about his fighting style and stuff?
No. Maybe I did. Although there was like a one-off book I vaguely recall.
Yeah,
vaguely recall.
And he completely had this like almost whirlwindy fighting style, and a kind of just a bit of an ode to him, to be honest, because he's a character that in the movies, he's there all the time,
yeah.
But he's not a major player, and he really should be a major player. People should talk about him like they talk about Yoda, you know what I mean? Because he's fantastic in the old books and stuff.
Criminally. If anyone should feel aggrieved by how shit the Star Wars prequels are, it's Samuel L. Jackson, who was so horrendously cast in that. You know, you could think of all the great roles. I'm not saying let's have Samuel L. Jackson be Samuel L. Jackson, you know, like, I'm tired of these motherfucking Sith on this motherfucking planet. But, you know, it's...
That is a tasty shit burger.
Some tasty Bacta. How does it taste, motherfucker? But, you know, in short answer, purple's a weird answer.
It's not if you consider everything. I mean, look, it's obvious that you could go light blue.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down between it's blue or green,
yeah.
And it's whether you go for the traditional of, and the reason why I my immediate answer was blue all day, and I was like, no, green, because as much as people got Jedi's still my favorite Star Wars film, and it's Luke on the platform. He signals, he jumps off, he flips up, he catches the green lightsaber, and he just starts cleaning house. And it's that idea that there's something just a little cooler about the green one than the blue one. So I'd probably just about go with the green one. And that unfortunately for those of you listening will wrap us up right there. Do let us know though what colour lightsaber you leave it in the review that you're gonna leave
I'm
on
gonna
iTunes.
Check on that fighting style of Mace Windu because it's doing my head in already. Absolutely. I can't remember.
We've actually got four more questions that we're gonna be answering. But for those of you on the podcast and you want more of this stuff, you can do the video version of this on the redmentv.com. The questions we're gonna be answering are, what does Klopp need to do to mount a proper Premier League challenge and Champions League challenge next season? Who's the one player we've been linked to be most disappointed to see us sign? Actually, sorry, three more questions. And now that Undertaker's retired, should Manninger do the same? So those are great. Those are the questions we're going to be answering. If you want more of the podcast, an extended version, go to redmentv.com and sign up. And again, if you enjoy what we do on the free podcast, please do go and rate us, Acast, iTunes, leave a review. It does the wonders for us.
And listen to this. This is Mace Windu, so Obi-Wan Kenobi. I created Varpad to answer my weakness. It channels my own darkness into a weapon of the light. I mean, what? I mean, now you understand.
Did you
I'm
see?
Suited. Yeah. I'm suited to that fighting style. I'm suited to that purple lightsaber.
Is that canon anymore?
It's probably done, yeah.
But yeah, there you go. Did you ever get any sense of that from the prequels? No, you did not.
His fight style was incredible.
Fuck you, George Lucas. Thanks very much for listening to the podcast this week, and check back here next week for another installment, Podcast 8, coming in your ears.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.